This is the South Florida Tech Podcast, a weekly show where we bring you the awesome, innovative people building our South Florida tech community. Each week, we'll introduce to you one of the Sunshine State's top business, startup, or tech leaders. Learn about who they are, what they do, and have some fun conversation along the way. Our podcast sponsor is Emerge Americas. Each year, global enterprises, disruptive technology, and elite startups are highlighted at Emerge's premier tech event, Connecting the Americas. The event is held in Miami Beach, which to date has hosted organizations from over 40 countries and featured over 250 speakers from around the world. Emerge Americas is transforming Miami's tech hub by connecting entrepreneurs, investors, leading business executives, and decision makers.
So for today's podcast, we're actually going to be talking to Jacqueline Bumgarten, the CEO and co-founder of Boatsetter. It's one of the more fun companies I like to look at out there, and we'll get to that in a second, but they are a technology and data-driven global marketplace making on-demand boating accessible and affordable to anyone, anywhere. Now, you probably can tell why I like the idea of it. Before her entrepreneurial career, Jacqueline earned her bachelor's from Wellesley College, where she graduated cum laude, and an MBA from Stanford Graduate School of Business. And in her success through Boatsetter and her several roles previously, she was able to receive some great awards like Inc. Magazine's top 2019 Top 100 Female Entrepreneurs and 2018's Endeavor Entrepreneur of the Year in Miami. She is awesome. Their company is so neat and so cool. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Joe and Joe, for having me. My goodness, after that intro, I should just walk away. There's nothing more to be said.
I feel the same way when people introduce me, but you've obviously had some really good success with the company, and it's been really neat to see it more or less, I think, grow up over the last few years as it's been around and obviously been growing. But why don't you just start off and tell us a little bit about you and a little elevator speech on the company?
Okay. I'd be delighted. Probably I'll start first with Boatsetter, and then I'm secondary to this beautiful creation. So Boatsetter is such a fun company. What we are is a leading online platform where anybody can go to rent a boat, whether you want to go for a few hours, whether you want to go for a day, whether you want to go for multi-day, literally with just a few taps on your phone, clicks on the computer, you can have an incredible experience. So if Joe wants to go fishing and Joe, you want to go sandbar hopping, sailing, you want to rent a yacht for a day, we can make any experience happen. And, you know, we were built with the mission to enable incredible experiences on the water for anyone, anywhere. And I use those words very deliberately. And that has really been the mission behind everything we've done and how we've built the technology, how we've built the service, and how we've integrated to make sure that we're the only marketplace that can allow for peer-to-peer boat rentals. We are insured by GEICO and Boat US, and we're here to make incredible experiences and memories for people that last a lifetime.
That's awesome. I can definitely say, as someone who has both used Boatsetter, even before I knew Jackie, I was hooked, loved it. I was even more excited to meet Jackie when I found out. I was like, oh my God, I'm your biggest fan, to even having a boat on Boatsetter. You know, that then gets rented. It's such an awesome service and really makes being on the water accessible. And anywhere where you can go boating, sometimes it doesn't like feel that accessible. So it's so cool to have this gateway for that. But I was kind of curious, what's the story? Like, did you always know you were going to be the founder of a tech company that enables people accessibility to the waters? Can you explain a little bit how you got started on this journey?
You've got it. That's a big question. Did I always know? No, I didn't always know that I would be doing this, Joe. But I did always know that I wanted to lead a team and build something. I've had that desire since I was a teenager. And, you know, I set upon a path to position me for success for when I was ready to launch my own company. And so back in 2012, when I reached a point where I decided I wanted to build something on my own because I had the foundation and the background and the skills and finally the confidence that I needed to take that leap of faith, I took some time to really think about what made me happy and consistently, I kept coming back to these amazing memories of my dad taking my brothers and I out on a boat when we were kids outside of Chicago and Fox Lake. And those were some of the happiest memories we had as a family. And I thought, how amazing would it be to be able to make something like that accessible to anyone? You know, boating historically has been, and as you said, a difficult to access leisure activity. Boats are expensive. They are expensive to maintain. My vision was to be able for someone to make it possible for anyone to have that experience if they wanted it, even if they didn't have any prior boating experience. And that's why, as part of Boat Setter's core model, we have the largest database of U.S. Coast Guard licensed captains. So you don't have to have any prior experience. And not only can you pick your captain, you can pick the experience that you want, whether you want somebody who can take you deep sea fishing, sandbar hopping, you can name that experience and you can see the reviews that other people have provided that captain. So that was one side of what inspired me to do it. On the flip side, Joe, back in 2012, I have three brothers and two of my brothers are boat owners. One has a pontoon and the other one has a Mastercraft. Thank you. I'm very happy he has a Mastercraft. I'm on the board of Mastercraft, so I have a personal affinity for that boat. And they were both complaining to me it was just at the end of the summer of 2012 that they were going to have to sell their boats because they hadn't used them for a year. And their challenge is one that's very common across the U.S. You know, there's 12 million registered boat owners in the United States, and they use their boats an average of 14 days a year. And there was no outlet before what we've created, Boat Setter, for a private owner to be able to offset the cost of ownership in a safe and insured manner. And so we set out on this mission, and I was able to work with leading maritime underwriters to build the very first peer-to-peer marine insurance policy. That, coupled with building the platform in the marketplace, is what allowed Boat Setter to exist in terms of what Boat Setter is today.
That's so neat. You talk about the family connections. I mean, I remember going out on the boat. My father and I would go out in this boat in the lake in New York, and that was like a lot of good father-son time. Although he loves telling a story, and it's actually his birthday today, so I'll say it publicly, and he can deal with that, about how he took my mom out once on a boat, and they got grounded on a sandbar. She did not like that. But there's always some fun family stories there for sure that I always like going back to. So going to Cruisin', which was the company you co-founded out in California, I believe, that company merged with Boat Setter. So there were two companies and then you created one. How did those two companies kind of play hand in hand? And what was the merger decision like? Like, how did you guys come together and say, hey, we can be better together, and then go about that journey together?
Yeah, it's a great question, especially for a lot of early entrepreneurs who are thinking about alternate paths for how to grow, whether it's organic or inorganic. So Cruisin' was the company that I launched, that we built the first insurance policy with. So it was the first peer-to-peer marketplace. About a year after we launched, Boat Setter came into the market, and they were focusing on commercial operators. And Andy Sterner, who is my co-founder, he and I met and evaluated the benefits of joining forces. So you asked the question, what were the reasons and the synergies? Well, at that point in time, we were both very early in our paths, and we were both fundraising. And we knew how we were gonna use the capital. And if we were both fundraising from investors and we were gonna use the capital to invest in the same areas, it would have been wasted resources. We had also invested and built out different areas. I had the peer-to-peer insurance and the marketing, and he had developed the platform and the technology and started to get commercial operators on and captains. So for us, it made all the sense in the world to combine them, because our vision is to be the destination marketplace for on-water experiences and for all boat owners, whether they're commercial operators or private owners, to be able to list their boats.
Very cool. Very cool. And shout out to Andy, who also ended up connecting you and I, Jackie, which was many years ago over at Panther Coffee in Wynwood.
Something I will be forever grateful and appreciative of him for.
Everyone meets at Panther Coffee too. Yeah. Like such the connector dot.
It was spot. Like a date. It was a date. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On that note, actually, part of why we met in that meeting is it wasn't actually a business meeting. It was more so just like, hey, fellow entrepreneurs connecting, you know, having, you know, probably similar highs and lows, different content, but same emotions. So I am curious, can you talk a little, like, you know, we also met through, you know, we're connected through Endeavor. You're an Endeavor entrepreneur. You know, how has, you know, what's Endeavor, how has it supported you? Are there other entrepreneur kind of organizations that have supported you in your journey? And how do you connect with other founders? And have you found that to be helpful?
Okay, a lot to pack in there. Let me break it down. So let's start with a shout out to Andy. You know, I moved here from San Francisco when we merged and had no network in Florida and was heads down morning till night in the business. And I think he took pity on me and felt that I needed some friends and needed to connect into the community. And Andy, you know, has been here for decades. So he knows the wealth of resources and opportunities that exist here for founders. He's even founded one of the early stage seed funds. So I was really blessed to have him as a guide in opening up my world here in South Florida. So that's step one, I think, to your first question. Now, with that, there are a lot of organizations here that can really help support and catapult the growth and success of particularly tech companies. Endeavor, the Knight Foundation, as you've mentioned a few. You know, we've had a local VC, the Venture City, that's been tremendous in helping us in getting access to resources and tapping into the network. And there are many others well beyond that. And I was so pleasantly surprised in coming out here from San Francisco and seeing the network and the community that existed. And I can tell you that was back in 2015. Since then, it's only blossomed and become, you know, much more robust in terms of what they can offer to help support entrepreneurs.
That's awesome. Love it.
So one of the things that I was kind of interested in, you got your MBA from Stanford, which is not an easy school to get into. I'm assuming the educational side of that's pretty tough as well, but it's one of the most prestigious institutions in the world. Was there anything that you learned through that experience inside the classroom, outside the classroom, that really kind of set the stage for where you are today and where you're kind of staged as the leader of this company to take it to the next level?
So yes, I think at the root of that question is what is the foundation that an entrepreneur needs to have before jumping off and venturing into doing something on their own? And for me, Stanford Business School was a part of that, of the building blocks that I needed to, one, have the theory of business in, you know, anything from negotiation, marketing, you name it, general management. That was a basic foundation, but there is nothing that can replace experience. That's the greatest education one can have. So, you know, in addition to Stanford, I didn't leave business school and decide to start my own company. I still felt, you know, after 6 years of work experience, 2 years full-time in the MBA program, I still needed a better foundation before I felt I'd be in a position to be able to lead a team, raise capital, and grow and scale an organization. So I made the choice to go into a corporate rotational program that was, in essence, an entrepreneurial experience. So for a large company, I wrote business plans and I launched two subsidiaries, or launched a subsidiary for them, which was an entrepreneurial venture. But it taught me how to lead a team. It taught me how to project manage effectively. It taught me how to galvanize people around a shared vision. And even if they have very different objectives and points of view, how to really develop and motivate everyone in working towards the same goal on a same timeline, on a budget. These are all critical skills that one gains through experience. And so really, it was so valuable for me to learn and build that experience on someone else's dime. And at that point, and so it literally, I spent 6 years in
corporate environments, entrepreneurial ventures. 1 year as a director of strategy for a very large company before I felt I had the skill set, the knowledge base, the processes, the network to then venture out on my own. And I think that's really important for entrepreneurs to hear. I get approached a lot by young people coming out of college who have an idea and just want to jump in and do it. And I understand that, you know, how sexy that is. There's nothing more attractive than the idea of building your own company, but ideas are a dime a dozen. Everything comes down to execution and your ability to be able to build and lead a team and your ability to be able to gain the confidence and support of investors to get what your vision is launched. And that takes experience and skills that you can bring to the table. So I strongly recommend investing in your education on other people's dimes before jumping off on your own.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing. You probably get approached a lot more, but you know, I feel like every time, if you have a company that's broke the million mark, you get asked to tell your story often, which is, it's such an honor to do that. And a lot of the times, you know, I feel like I'm meeting a lot of people who are like, I have this idea, I think it's a $1 million idea. And I'm always like, that's great, but it really doesn't matter what the idea is. Like, are you ready to execute? And how much have you researched? How much have you educated? How much have you planned in advance? And there's always a fine line. There's the people who are gonna overplan and overeducate and never make the jump. And then there's the people who like make the jump. You know, you're always gonna make a leap of faith, but do it a little blindly. But talking about that, going from like education to practical experience, you know, one of the things that all of us read a lot about is deal terms. You know, speaking of a recent deal that just transacted is Slack selling to Salesforce for cool few $1 billion. Now is, you know, deals sound very structured and raising capital sounds very structured, but man, is there a lot of gray area as well. And also personalities. So can you've raised some capital, you're on a board, you have a board. Can you talk about some experience share from that and what you've learned?
Absolutely. So the experience of fundraising is, it will be one of the more challenging things that one will have to take on as an entrepreneur and a founder. That said, it is very different depending on the life cycle of where your company is. So I think I'd like to start talking about those early stage investors, because that's very different than when you go to venture investment. So early stage, a lot of it is about relationship building and storytelling. And there are certain tools that a founder needs to have at the hand ready in order to be effective at fundraising. And to put it in context, yes, I've raised about $35 million. And I've done it in a variety of mechanisms and deal structures, ranging from convertible notes early on for seed investment, onto venture priced rounds, onto follow on priced rounds. And now we're moving into growth and scale, in, you know, larger investment sizes for growth and scale. And so the expectations, the metrics, the benchmarks that investors use are very different depending on, one, your industry, and two, where you are in the life cycle of the company. So my advice early on to a seed investor or a founder that's looking for their first seed investment is, number one, put your own money in first, even if it's limited. Personally, I felt that I had no right to put my hand out and ask someone for money if I hadn't put my own money in first. And so during those years of corporate America, the money that I had made, my salary, I put into a condo that I had in LA. I put that on the market, put everything out in storage, and that was my seed capital initially. And I lived on friends' couches and didn't take a salary for the first 2 years of my company's existence. So you do what you have to do to survive. Secondarily, it was very hard for me to raise initially because I didn't have a track record as a CEO. And yes, because of Stanford, I was able to get the meetings in the door at Sand Hill, but nobody wrote a check. You know, I had a very, very polite escort to the door. And so I knew that I was going to have to get creative in figuring out how to keep this company alive and growing without getting some of the traditional funds and checks. So friends and family was a source, and there it's all about credibility and trust and being able to lay out your plan, show them the uses of capital, you know, and know your business inside and out. That's critical. So when I talk about creativity, this is something that we did because I wasn't able to raise from venture early on or even traditional investors. I thought about how I would use that capital if I had it. How would I market it? How would I go about getting my owners on the site? How would I go about getting renters? How would I go about getting the first MVP of the product built? Well, you get creative. I offered equity to my first developers in lieu of cash, and they took that. I think it's going to be an investment they're very, very pleased with. Secondarily, in terms of how figuring out how to get access to owners, I dug into my industry. I knew who all the major marina owner operators were, and I worked my tail off to get meetings with them and convince them to invest in me. So they opened up their network of owners, and we did rev share, and we created partnerships in lieu of equity that would have been dilutive, because the equity that I raised, I would have used for these purposes anyways. You know, we went to boat manufacturers and we went to the National Marine Manufacturers Association. We got very creative in figuring out how we could achieve our goal to be able to acquire customers and do it in a way that was beneficial, not only to our partner, but to us.
That's awesome.
Oh, and one lesson that I wish someone had told me and I wish I had internalized early on.
Tell us, we need to know.
You know this, Joe, more than anything. Your most vital and limited asset is your time and your energy as a founder, because you are giving your company 100% of who you are, what you have. And when going out to seed investors, these are often people who are semi-retired, high net worth, and this is a hobby for a lot of them, is the honest truth. And so they love to hear about what's new, what's going on, and they'll have meeting after meeting with you. But it took a very long time for me to really learn to read body language, to learn the signals, and to learn the unspoken no. Hmm. And that is something I wish I had learned early on, because you cannot afford to waste your time when you're fundraising. If somebody says to you, this sounds great, go out and do this, then come back to me, that's a no. Walk away, that's a no. You know, you want to hold on to hope as a fundraiser, and there are moments when you feel desperate, but you need to understand that it's a privilege to invest in what you're building. It's a privilege to be part of this journey, and you have to internalize that and approach these conversations from that perspective and fiercely protect your time.
Yeah, and on a lighter note, I would imagine it's very unique to try and talk about like fundraising in a Shark Tank perspective when you're dealing with a nautical company. The connotation there probably doesn't go so well. So I can't help but think that, you know, there's a lot of really unique circumstances for the company and you know, because it's on the water, because it's nautical, that come up. But one of the things you hit on was shared vision and motivating people. And typically, you know, I read that boat setter mainly works together in one room, the team that is, and everybody is kind of there collaborating. I'm sure COVID had kind of changed that. But can you talk about the importance of that team dynamic in building this company and all working closely together on that vision?
Team is at the core of the success of any company. It's the most important component, and our values and our shared values are critically important. And yes, you know, pre-COVID, if you came into our offices, we were all sitting in one common open space. You know, the only offices were reserved for teams that wanted to do breakout meetings and working together. The cross-pollination of ideas is paramount for success. And I am so fortunate now to have a team that has leaders in their areas of business that are so much more knowledgeable and capable than I am, which is something I dreamed about, and it's taken years to get there. And so I think as a leader, hiring people who you know are more competent and will excel in their role, and not being afraid of that, welcoming that, is so critical to building a strong and healthy team and giving them the resources that they need to succeed and allowing them the opportunity to test and fail and creating an environment that welcomes that and doesn't penalize that is also critically important. And I call that out because I come from corporate environments where it was the opposite. There was no flexibility or tolerance for risk or failure. And as a result, you don't innovate and it stifles innovation. And so we consciously took the opposite approach here at Boatsetter. And everybody knows that they have a voice in the organization, regardless of where they are, and they're expected to use it. And their point of view is welcome. You know, there's a combination of using data to drive decisions and then drawing out the ideas and creativity from the team. And I'd like to believe now with the leadership that we've put in place, and I've recently brought in a new president who's running the day-to-day operations, which has been a big shift for me as we move towards scaling. It's really helped me appreciate the value of that cross-pollination of ideas and really driving collaboration across the organization.
And I will say the Boatsetter team is awesome. We have firsthand experience and really proud to have some Wind Coders and Wind talent on that team. So tech teams and overall team is doing great stuff there.
Thank you to you for helping us build it with such incredible resources.
So one thing too to hit on, I was curious if you have anything special to share, any announcements coming up about the company that you would like to hit on before we kind of round out the questions.
You got it. So this is something we can all relate to. You know, during the pandemic, we've all been locked inside. And I think many people are looking for an opportunity to be able to get outside, enjoy the holidays safely with the people they love. And we are super pleased to share that we are doing a lot of new promotions around the holidays. And we are helping people create new traditions around the holiday season on the water, because there are very few places where families can go outdoors and enjoy being on the water, enjoying a boat while social distancing. It's a safe way for families to get together on the holidays and have fun. So tomorrow, a little teaser, we're going to be having a big press announcement of a very exciting partnership for new experiences we're going to be offering for the holidays this season.
Awesome. I will definitely be keeping an eye and an ear out for that tomorrow. So that's exciting. So this has been filled with so much great insight. Thanks, Jackie. And before we wrap up, Joe still has one more question, but just before that, we like to do a little rapid fire. So let's get into it. The first question is, what is the book currently on your nightstand? What are you currently reading?
Oh my gosh, there are about 12 books stacked high that are each like partially read. My goodness, what is the one about the founder? Right now I'm reading the one about the founder of Silk Road.
Okay, awesome, like it. What is your most productive time of day?
The morning. I block an hour at 9 to 10.
Awesome, and what time do you go to bed?
Lately, 12:30.
Ooh, and what time do you wake up?
Lately, 6 to 7.
Do you have any favorite podcasts or what do you listen to get in the zone?
I'm an NPR junkie. I'm listening to NPR all the time.
That's great. And if you had a motto or a mantra or a quote that you live by that inspires you and drives you, what is that motto or mantra
or quote? I was singing it today and my husband laughs. He's like, this song was meant for you. I get knocked down, but I get up again.
And you can sing as well.
Not quite, but tenacity. Anything related to tenacity and never quitting.
There you go. So that said, last question. What is one bit of advice you can give to aspiring tech leaders who are listening into this podcast?
One bit. Don't give up on your dreams. And any challenges you face, just stand up, brush the dust off, and find an alternate solution for it. I think people need to have more tenacity and commitment and finding creative ways to make their vision come to life.
Awesome. Well, Jacqueline, thank you so much. While we were recording, I was actually looking at boat setter and seeing what some of the boats were around me. So, I mean, I'm obviously a big fan of what you do, and I really appreciate you taking some time here. For those who are interested in learning more about Palm Beach Tech, you can go to palmbeachtech.org. Also want to thank our sponsor, Wincode Academy, where Joe is the co-founder and CEO of. If you're looking to get your career jump-started in technology, they have amazing courses in web development, UI, UX, digital marketing. You can check them out at wincode.co for more information. And thank you, Joe, and thank you, Jacqueline, for spending some time with me on the podcast today.
My pleasure. Thank you guys so much for having me and for showcasing BoatSetter.
Of course. Have a good day, y'all.
Bye.
We'd like to thank our producing sponsor, MediaOps. They're the premier global media platform for technical communities with brands such as DevOps.com, Security Boulevard, Container Journal, and Digital Anarchist. DevOps.com, their primary brand, attracts and engages a thriving online community of technology professionals around the world. It is the largest collection of original content relating to DevOps on the web today, featuring up-to-the-minute news, highlighted stories, blogs, and more.